April 3rd, 2004. Lacine, Kansas. 23-year-old Alonzo Brooks vanishes while attending a party at a farmhouse, and his body is discovered on the banks of a nearby creek nearly 1 month later. While a forensic pathologist is unable to determine Alonzo's exact cause of death, rumors start circulating that he was the victim of a hate crime before his body was placed at that location. In 2021, after Alonzo's body is exhumed and given a new autopsy, it is announced that his death has officially been reclassified as a homicide, but there's still no conclusive answers about how he was killed. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and this week, we're going to be exploring a highly requested case which is featured on the Netflix reboot of Unsolved Mysteries, the 2004 unexplained death of Alonzo Brooks. Or, I guess we can now officially call it, the murder of Alonzo Brooks. This is the story of a young man who went missing after attending a party at a farmhouse in rural Kansas, before his body was discovered on the banks of a nearby creek nearly 1 month later. While Alonzo's exact cause of death could not be determined, there was no direct evidence of foul play, but since Alonzo was one of the only persons of color attending a party in a predominantly white area, the authorities did explore the possibility that he was the victim of a hate crime. There was also some controversy over the fact that the area where Alonzo's body was found had been extensively searched during the 27-day period he was missing, leading to speculation that someone planted his body there at a later time. It's now been nearly 3 years since the Unsolved Mysteries Netflix reboot was launched, and a number of their episodes have featured cases where a victim's death was officially ruled to be suicide or an accident, but their loved ones were certain that they had been murdered and were seeking justice. But one of the biggest criticisms the series has received is that it has often twisted their narratives and left out key details about these stories, which do point towards the deaths being suicide or an accident after all. However, the Alonzo Brooks case may be the exception to this, because shortly after the Unsolved Mysteries episode aired, his body was exhumed for a new autopsy, and new evidence was uncovered which led to the authorities officially reclassifying his death as a homicide. Of course, this took place just over 2 years ago, and there have not been any new developments in the investigation since then, but at the very least, we now know that there is an actual crime to solve, and a perpetrator or perpetrators to bring to justice. The details of how Alonzo was killed, and how his body wound up on the banks of that creek are still unclear, so we're going to have a lot to analyze on this episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the death of Alonzo Brooks. Our story begins in Kansas in 2004, and our central figure is 23-year-old Alonzo Brooks. Alonzo was originally born in Topeka to an African-American father, Billy Brooks Sr., and a Mexican mother, Maria Ramirez. He was the youngest of their five children, and described as being a quote-unquote surprise baby, since he was born many years after his brother and three sisters. At some point, Billy Sr. and Maria got divorced, and she got remarried and moved to the town of Gardner. While Alonzo remained in Topeka and worked with his father until he was in his early 20s, he ultimately decided to relocate to Gardner and move in with his mother, and got a job as a custodian for his stepfather's janitorial company. Alonzo was always described as a homebody who loved spending time with his family, but while he was a bit shy, he was also known for being a very nice person who got along with everyone and never caused any trouble. On the evening of April the 3rd, Alonzo and his circle of friends made plans to attend a party, as one of them was leaving to join the military and they wanted to celebrate his departure. The party would take place at a rural farmhouse on Highway K-152 just outside Lacine, a small town located in Linn County with a population of around 1,100 people. Lacine is 47 miles south of Gardner, so the group of friends would travel to the party in separate vehicles, and since Alonzo did not drive, he hitched a ride with a friend named Justin Sprague. Before he left, Alonzo told his mother that he would return home later that night, but this would turn out to be the last time she ever saw him alive. When Alonzo and his friends arrived at the farmhouse for the party, they apparently thought it would only be a small gathering, but throughout the course of the evening, it's believed that upwards of 100 people showed up and trickled through there. The attendees appeared to be between the ages of 16 and 25, and while Alonzo and his friends recognized a few of them from Gardner, they did not know most of the people there. Regardless, everyone described Alonzo as being more outgoing than usual at the party, as he drank a lot of alcohol and appeared to be having a great time. However, one of Alonzo's friends, Daniel Fune, would later describe an incident in which he noticed that Alonzo had gotten into an argument with another partygoer until Daniel intervened and pulled Alonzo away before the confrontation could get physical. When the case was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, Daniel and another friend of Alonzo's named Tyler Bocard agreed to be interviewed. They both discussed leaving the party at different points throughout the night and saying goodbye to Alonzo, but said there was nothing out of the ordinary when they last saw him. Alonzo was supposed to get a ride home with Justin Sprague, but when the two friends both ran out of cigarettes, Justin offered to step out and drive somewhere in order to buy some. There's been a lot of dispute about what happened next, and I'm going to discuss this in more detail later on in the episode, but for now, here's the version of events that Justin shared during his interview on Unsolved Mysteries. According to Justin, after he drove away from the farmhouse, he took a wrong turn on some gravel roads and got lost until he wound up getting his car stuck about 30 minutes away from Lacine. Since Justin did not want to go to the trouble of finding his way back to the farmhouse, he used his cell phone to call another friend of his at the party named Adam. Justin wanted Adam to tell Alonzo that he had gotten lost, and Justin said that he could even hear Alonzo joking about it in the background. Justin said that Adam promised him he would give Alonzo a ride home, but for reasons that are still not entirely clear, this never took place. It seems like Alonzo and Adam lost track of each other, or there may have been a miscommunication of some sort, but Adam wound up leaving without him. Media outlets at the time reported that a fight took place at the party sometime between 2 and 3 a.m. on the morning of April the 4th, though it could not be confirmed if Alonzo was involved in it. They also reported that the last time Alonzo was seen was at around 3 or 4 a.m., but what actually happened to him would become a major unsolved mystery. Later that morning, one of Alonzo's friends called his residence and spoke to his mother. Maria had assumed that Alonzo returned home in the middle of the night, but when she checked his bedroom, she discovered that Alonzo was not there and his bed had clearly not been slept in. Alonzo's friend suggested that he might have spent the night at someone else's house, but Maria immediately became concerned since it was out of character for him to do this without contacting her. When Maria called Alonzo's other friends, she could not find anyone who could confirm having given him a ride from the party, and no one seemed to know where he was. This prompted Justin and some of Alonzo's other friends to drive back to Lacine, and they were also joined by Rodney English, a childhood friend of Alonzo's from Topeka who had not attended the party but was concerned about his absence. They proceeded to perform a search of the area surrounding the farmhouse, but could not find any trace of Alonzo. A long driveway separated the house from the highway, and while looking around there, Rodney came across Alonzo's hat and one of his boots in the ditch across the road. It wasn't long before Rodney found Alonzo's other boot in a ditch on the opposite side of the road several feet away. Since these items were lying out in the open, it did not appear that anyone had made an attempt to conceal them, and Rodney suspected that they were thrown from a moving vehicle. While Rodney and the rest of Alonzo's friends attempted to continue their search, a man driving an ATV suddenly showed up and told them to leave the property. While this was going on, Maria attempted to contact the police and file a missing persons report for Alonzo, but was told she would have to wait at least 48 hours. On April the 5th, Alonzo's brother, Billy Brooks Jr., and sister-in-law, Cindy, decided to travel to the farmhouse in Lacine. They learned that the house was a rental and that the tenants were four men in their 20s who were not from the area, but the place was empty when Billy and Cindy arrived. The identities of these four men have never been released publicly, but it's been reported that they were evicted from the house a short time after Alonzo went missing. Billy and Cindy tried searching through Lacine and the surrounding area for Alonzo, but could not find him, and noticed that they seemed to draw suspicious looks from the local residents. They finally decided to travel to nearby Mound City in order to pay a visit to the Linn County Sheriff's Office. Billy and Cindy both spoke with Sheriff Marvin Stites, who did not seem overly concerned about Alonzo's disappearance, and said that he was probably just, quote-unquote, out walking around. Well, needless to say, Billy and Cindy did not believe this, since both of Alonzo's boots were found lying in ditches, and he had recently suffered an ankle injury while playing basketball, which made it difficult for him to walk long distances. In spite of this, the sheriff's office did eventually agree to open a missing persons investigation for Alonzo, and on April the 7th, they turned the case over to the Kansas Bureau of Investigation, aka the KBI. While rumors started circulating throughout the area that Alonzo's disappearance might be race-related, as Lacine had a predominantly white population, and Alonzo was only three persons of color who attended the party that night. Some witnesses would claim that after Alonzo's friends left the party, a number of racial slurs and threats started getting tossed around. Alonzo was supposedly seen flirting with a white girl there, which may have escalated some tensions, and one witness would claim they overheard someone say that Alonzo, quote-unquote, won't get out of here alive. Even though Alonzo was known for being an easygoing guy, his friends believed that he was capable of getting mad and starting a fight if someone used a racial slur in his presence. For this reason, the KBI brought in the FBI to assist them with their investigation and look into the possibility that Alonzo may have been the victim of a hate crime. They conducted hundreds of interviews with witnesses who attended the party, and Alonzo's friends who went there with him that night were extensively questioned. A major search effort was performed of the area, and even though the farmhouse was mostly surrounded by fields, there was also a large stream of water called Middle Creek, located about 250 feet away. On April the 12th, the Lee Summit Underwater Rescue and Recovery Team were brought in to search the creek, where the water was only about 3 feet deep, but they failed to turn up any trace of Alonzo. While this was going on, the Brooks family constantly phoned the Linn County Sheriff's Office for updates, but were eventually told to stop contacting them because they were, quote-unquote, busy working on things. Since the search effort was coming up empty, the Brooks family wanted to perform their own search of the property surrounding the farmhouse, but even though this request was repeatedly denied for weeks, Sheriff Stites finally granted them permission to do so. On May the 1st, 27 days after Alonzo was last seen, his relatives and friends started searching the property alongside around 50 volunteers. Well, only about a half hour after they started, some of the search volunteers started heading towards a white shed on the property, but while cutting through some brush in order to clear a path, they suddenly came across Alonzo's body on the banks of Middle Creek. He was lying on top of a pile of debris, and aside from his missing boots, Alonzo was fully clothed, so investigators from the KBI and FBI were quickly summoned to the scene to recover his body. Alonzo's autopsy would be performed by Dr. Eric Mitchell, a forensic pathologist who was Douglas County coroner at that time. Dr. Mitchell was unable to determine Alonzo's exact cause of death, as his post-mortem examination turned up no broken bones or fractures, no penetrating injuries, no sign of blunt force trauma, and no gunshot or stab wounds. Mitchell could not rule out the possibility that strangulation may have occurred, as the soft tissues of Alonzo's neck had been decomposed and damaged by animals and insects, and even though there was no water in Alonzo's lungs, he could not completely dismiss the idea that he drowned. But since there was no direct evidence of foul play, Alonzo's cause of death was officially ruled to be undetermined. Since Alonso had been drinking at the party, one potential theory was that he became so intoxicated that he wandered away from the farmhouse towards Middle Creek before he passed out and died of exposure. While Mitchell could not say with any certainty that Alonso's death was accidental, he did believe that the evidence found on his body was consistent with having been on the banks of the creek for nearly a month. Well, Alonso's loved ones had a hard time believing that, as he only had a mild level of decomposition on his body, which they felt did not support the idea of him being out in the elements for 27 days. Mitchell theorized that Alonso could have wound up in Middle Creek and was trapped underwater in a clog of branches and other debris before a rainstorm caused the water levels to rise and his body was jarred loose and floated towards the bank where he was found. However, Alonso's family did not believe that he was underwater for an extended period of time, as his body did not appear to be bloated and his skin complexion looked normal. Furthermore, Alonso also had a number of personal items on him, such as a billfold wallet and a bandana, which show no signs of water damage. The Lee's Summit Underwater Rescue and Recovery Team were also certain that they would not have missed Alonso's body during their initial search of Middle Creek, since the water was only a few feet deep at that time. The theory provided by Alonso's brother, Billy, is that when Sheriff Stites gave his family permission to perform their own search of the property, Stites may have told other people about it, and word eventually got back to those who were responsible for Alonso's death. They then responded by placing Alonso's body on the banks of Middle Creek for his family to find. Indeed, one unconfirmed rumor which has always circulated throughout the community is that Alonso's body was kept inside a freezer during the 27-day window he was missing, which is why the body only had mild decomposition when it was discovered. But even though dozens of witnesses who had attended the party were interviewed by law enforcement, none of them provided information that led the investigation any closer to a resolution, and some of these witnesses reportedly lawyered up before they could be questioned and declined to take polygraph tests. The case would remain dormant until June of 2019, when the KBI announced that they were unable to turn up any evidence that Alonso had been the victim of a crime, so they were closing the investigation into his death. But 1 year later, on June the 11th, 2020, it was publicly announced that the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the United States Attorney's Office had reopened the investigation and were still exploring the possibility that Alonso had been the victim of a hate crime. A $100,000 reward was now being offered for information which led to the arrest and conviction of the individual responsible for Alonso's death. According to Stephen McAllister, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Kansas, the case had been brought to their attention by Unsolved Mysteries, who were about to launch a reboot of their show on Netflix. During an interview with Entertainment Weekly, one of the show's co-creators, Terry Dunmuir, confirmed that Alonso's story had been on their radar since 2017, and they were always hoping to feature it on Unsolved Mysteries when they relaunched the show. Well, on July the 1st, the reboot finally dropped on Netflix, and Alonso's episode was titled No Ride Home. As a result, a number of new tips came in and were passed on to the FBI. One new piece of information, which was later shared publicly, is that a second party had taken place in Lacine on the night Alonso went missing. When a fight broke out there, a number of the attendees wound up leaving and heading over to the party at the farmhouse, so investigators were hoping that anyone who attended both parties might have some useful information and come forward. Just over 3 weeks after the release of the Unsolved Mysteries episode, the FBI had Alonso's body exhumed and transported to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware for a new autopsy from the Armed Forces Medical Examiner. In April of 2021, the FBI announced that this autopsy had allowed them to conclusively determine that Alonso's death was not an accident. While they've been secretive about specific details, they did state that this examination revealed that Alonso had injuries to his body which were, quote-unquote, inconsistent with normal patterns of decomposition. Therefore, his death was officially reclassified as a homicide. Timothy Langan, the special agent in charge of the Kansas City branch of the FBI, stated, quote, "We remain dedicated to uncovering the truth surrounding the murder of Alonzo Brooks and ensuring that those responsible are held accountable for their actions," end quote. While the FBI has launched a new investigation into Alonzo's death, no new developments have been publicly released during the past 2 years, so the circumstances of how he was killed continue to remain an unsolved mystery. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So I still remember when the episode about this story dropped on Netflix, and Unsolved Mysteries fans were instantly comparing it to one of the most memorable cases from the original series, and that's the unexplained 1981 death of Kurt Soba. As you probably know, that story was also featured on The Trail Went Cold, and it involved a 17-year-old kid who went missing while attending a party until his body was discovered in a nearby vacant lot 5 days later. Even though Kurt had supposedly been drinking a lot of alcohol on the night he was last seen alive, the medical examiner was unable to determine an exact cause of death. This lot had also been searched on a previous occasion during the 5-day window Kurt was missing, and his body was not there, so of course, there was speculation that whoever was involved in Kurt's death placed him at that location to be found. Well, I'm sure you can already see the parallels with the Alonzo Brooks case, though I'd say this one is even more puzzling. Instead of 5 days, Alonzo had been missing 27 days before he was found, and his body was at a location which had been extensively searched by numerous law enforcement agencies. And while the circumstances of how Kurt Soba died are still a mystery, the consensus seems to be that it was accidental, and possibly the result of something like alcohol poisoning, so I doubt that a homicide took place. However, that's certainly not the case with Alonzo Brooks, who was a person of color who went missing and was found dead in a predominantly white area that seems to have a reputation for racism among its residents. Now that it's officially been confirmed that foul play took place, there has been speculation that he was the victim of a hate crime. As you can imagine, this theory picked up a lot of steam because by pure coincidence, the Unsolved Mysteries episode happened to drop just over a month after the murder of George Floyd, so as you can imagine, racial tensions were running high in the United States at that time. Even though the Kansas Bureau of Investigation had closed Alonzo's case in 2019, the FBI and the Department of Justice still felt it was worth pursuing, and I find it interesting that they publicly announced they were investigating his death as a hate crime a few weeks before the Unsolved Mysteries episode came out. I'm sure they sensed there would be a strong reaction to the presentation of Alonzo's story, and wanted to preemptively assure the public that yes, they were working on the case and taking it seriously. And sure enough, it wasn't long before Alonzo's body was exhumed and given a new autopsy, which uncovered new evidence to compel the authorities to officially reclassify his death as a homicide. All we know is that they made this determination based on a re-examination of injuries on Alonzo's body, as I'm sure a lot of details have been withheld from the public, and we have no idea what new leads, if any, that investigators may have looked into these past 2 years. I mentioned in the intro that the biggest criticism of the Unsolved Mysteries reboot is that they've covered a number of cases involving suspicious suicides or accidental deaths, and had a tendency to leave out key details which do not fit the foul play narrative. Like the original series, this reboot could potentially be used as a valuable tool to bring a resolution to unsolved crimes, but it doesn't really help much when they're focusing on so many stories in which there is no actual crime to solve. Whenever they drop new episodes on Netflix, it's become tradition for media outlets to publish articles about the featured cases titled "What Unsolved Mysteries Left Out." We've seen this type of article for their episode on Alonzo Brooks, as they did leave out some details, but to be fair, I haven't found any new information during my research which would point towards Alonzo's death being an accident, or the show giving a dishonest presentation in order to fit their narrative. But out of all the cases featured on the Unsolved Mysteries reboot, I think the death of Alonzo Brooks is probably the one in which you're going to find the largest amount of rumors, gossip, and unconfirmed speculation online. They even acknowledged this during the episode, and discuss some of the uncorroborated theories which have been shared on places like Reddit and social media these past 2 decades. Back in 2010, a blog called Cold Case Kansas published a post about this case, and its comments section is just flush with people claiming to be from the Lacine area who have shared all the rumors and gossip that have supposedly spread throughout the years. This case has often been described as one of those small-town mysteries in which the entire community knows who did it, but a cover-up has been orchestrated to protect the guilty parties, and the authorities lack the necessary evidence to make an arrest. Well, one thing the Unsolved Mysteries did not do is present the names of any potential suspects or persons of interest, and other than three of Alonso's friends, we do not know the identities of anyone who hosted or attended the party which took place on the night Alonso disappeared. But if you search hard enough online, you can find the names of some local residents who are rumored to be involved in Alonso's death. Since their names have never been shared by law enforcement, I'm not going to repeat them on this episode, but I will mention that a number of them hail from a prominent family in the area, which is why there have been so many conspiracy theories about a cover-up. One of the most prevalent rumors is that Alonso's death occurred because he flirted with a young white woman at the party who was a member of this family, which may have paved the way for a hate crime. During an interview she gave with Dateline, Alonso's mother, Maria Ramirez, stated, quote, "I'm Mexican and his father is black, so he's mixed. They didn't just target one race or kill one race, they killed two. He was targeted because of the color of his skin," end quote. So honestly, before Alonso's death was reclassified as a homicide, I had mixed feelings about the case following my initial viewing of the Unsolved Mysteries episode. On one hand, I seriously doubted that this was a simple case of an intoxicated man wandering away from a party and dying of exposure. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me that Alonso would leave the farmhouse, walk to the end of a long driveway, remove both of his boots, toss them each into separate ditches, and then walk back onto the property in the opposite direction towards Middle Creek. Admittedly, people can do incredibly strange and illogical things when they're drunk, but I had a hard time believing that his body could have been missed at that location for nearly an entire month. Of course, I've covered a number of other cases on this podcast where people have gone missing in a rural or wilderness area, and the remains were missed during the initial search effort, only for them to be discovered in the same area months or even years later. If Alonso's search effort had only been conducted by a small-town police department who were inexperienced at this sort of thing, I could give them the benefit of the doubt that they missed his body, but this particular search involved the KBI, the FBI, and an underwater rescue and recovery team who were specifically trained at this sort of thing. Members of this team were even interviewed on Unsolved Mysteries, and they seemed pretty certain that if Alonso had been on the creek bank the entire time, they would have found him. While they certainly could be capable of making mistakes, I think it says something that when Alonso's family, who were not trained for this sort of thing, performed their own search of this property, they came across his body within half an hour. But while the Unsolved Mysteries episode left me with the impression that something strange occurred and that Alonso may have been the victim of foul play, my biggest issue is that I cannot figure out how he was killed or why his body would be concealed for 27 days and planted near the creek. The theory pushed forward by Alonso's family is that when Linn County Sheriff Marvin Stites granted them permission to search the property, word got back to the people who were responsible for Alonso's death, so they responded by placing his body on the creek bank for the family to find. But where did they keep his body for nearly a month? The mild level of decomposition on Alonso's body really seems to go against the idea that he was lying out in the elements for weeks, and since he was carrying personal possessions which did not have noticeable water damage, it's unlikely that he was submerged in Middle Creek. This is why a theory is spread around that the body was kept inside a freezer for a few weeks, and I think one of the reasons this rumor caught fire is because the family suspected of being complicit in Alonso's death apparently own a restaurant in the area with a large freezer. All that being said, it would be incredibly risky and brazen to store the body of a murder victim at your place of business. In fact, why even hold on to the body to begin with? Lacine is surrounded by a lot of open land, so there would be plenty of spots to bury a victim and ensure he would never be found. But then, perhaps the responsible parties felt that if Alonso continued to remain a missing person, people would keep returning to the area to keep searching for him for years to come, so they felt they should leave them something to find. Of course, until the most recent autopsy, One of the biggest issues with the homicide theory was that there did not appear to be any noticeable injuries on Alonzo's body or anything to indicate his exact cause of death. Dr. Eric Mitchell, the forensic pathologist who performed the original autopsy, acknowledged that he could not rule out the possibility of drowning or strangulation, but did seem to feel that the evidence supported the idea that Alonzo's body had been lying on the creek bank the entire time he was missing. But while Mitchell was Douglas County coroner at the time he examined Alonzo, he does have a pretty controversial background. Before he relocated to Kansas, Mitchell had worked in upstate New York as the Onondaga County medical examiner, but resigned from his position in 1993 over allegations of misconduct, as his offenses included harvesting organs from deceased victims without the consent of their families, and improperly storing skeletons and body parts inside his office. Mitchell has also recently been at the center of a wrongful conviction case from Douglas County, as a daycare worker named Carity Buckhorn was charged and convicted of second-degree murder for her alleged role in the death of a 9-month-old infant named Oliver Ortiz. The conviction was made possible by Dr. Mitchell's testimony, as he believed that Oliver had a skull fracture, which was caused by his head being stepped on. But it would later come out that the child actually died from congenital heart disease, and there was never any foul play, so Buckhorn's conviction was overturned, and she was released from prison last year, after serving 4 years for a crime that never happened. So this obviously shows that Mitchell has some credibility issues, and that he may have made mistakes during his autopsy on Alonzo, and missed something which showed that he was the victim of a homicide. All we know about the second autopsy from the Armed Forces Medical Examiner is that Alonzo had injuries which were, quote-unquote, inconsistent with normal patterns of decomposition. If I had to make an educated guess, I think that Alonzo may have had injuries to his neck, as Mitchell even acknowledged that he couldn't rule out the possibility of strangulation. When Alonzo's body was found, the soft tissues of his neck were gone due to decomposition and damage from animals and insects. If Alonzo had some noticeable wounds on his neck when his body was placed on the creek bank, then it's only natural that this would be the first spot that scavengers would feast upon. So I would not be surprised if the second autopsy found evidence of damage to Alonzo's neck. I don't know how true this is, but it's worth mentioning that one of the many unconfirmed rumors which has spread around the community is that a shock collar ordinarily used to train dogs was placed around Alonzo's neck in order to torture him. Another issue I always had with the foul play theory is the idea that Alonzo could have been killed at this party in the presence of several witnesses, and they have all somehow managed to keep their mouths shut about it for nearly 20 years. Of course, there have always been allegations that this cover-up was made possible because the responsible parties had ties to local law enforcement, but I'm not sure that's an entirely fair assessment. The Linn County Sheriff at the time was Marvin Stites, who has since passed away and is no longer around to comment on the case, but the Brooks family did not have many flattering things to say about him on the Unsolved Mysteries episode. On the one hand, he did not seem to take Alonzo's disappearance all that seriously at first, and if he really did try to imply that Alonzo left the party, took off his boots, and attempted to walk home, even though he lived 47 miles away, then yes, that's pretty ridiculous. But on the other hand, Stites did contact the KBI for assistance only 4 days after Alonzo went missing, and of course, the rumors about a potential hate crime soon led to the FBI becoming involved in the investigation. If Stites was attempting to orchestrate a cover-up to protect Alonzo's killers, I have my doubts that he would bring in all these outside law enforcement agencies so quickly. It's also worth noting that even though Lacine is a very small town, Alonzo's death was not the only high-profile criminal case to occur there during that time period. Notorious serial killer John Edward Robinson happened to live on a farm near Lacine and was arrested there only 4 years earlier in June of 2000. Robinson is currently serving multiple life sentences in prison and was responsible for the murders of at least 8 victims, 2 of whom were found inside some chemical drums on his property. Marvin Stites was still Linn County Sheriff at that time, so he was no stranger to bringing in outside agencies like the KBI and the FBI when the investigation was too large for him to handle. It's yet to be conclusively proven if Alonzo's death was actually a hate crime, but even if it wasn't, These rumors have helped ensure that the FBI have continued to take the case seriously. I know that many of Alonzo's friends and family members have always believed that racism played a role in his death, as we have the account from his brother Billy and sister-in-law Cindy that people were looking at them very strangely while they were searching through Lacine. There's also a vivid moment during the Unsolved Mysteries episode when Alonzo's friend, Rodney English, who also happens to be black, revisits the spot where he found Alonzo's hat and boots, and then tells the camera crew that he needs to get out of there because he doesn't feel safe at all. Rodney, as well as Alonzo's family, have always felt a lot of resentment towards Alonzo's other friends for leaving him behind at the party. Since all of these friends were white, I get the sense that Rodney believes they severely underestimated the racial tension surrounding Alonzo's presence that night and should never have left him alone in such a potentially hostile environment. And while Alonzo was known for being a very sweet and easygoing guy who got along with everyone, it sounds like he would show no hesitation to confront someone if they used a racial slur in his presence. But if Alonzo was murdered at the farmhouse, how would these events have played out? Well, the Unsolved Mysteries episode features interviews with three of Alonzo's friends who attended the party with him, Justin Sprague, Daniel Fune, and Tyler Bogard, though we know there were other friends who went with them and did not appear on camera. The story goes that they decided to spend the night celebrating because one of these friends was leaving to join the military, but what's frustrating is that it's never been made clear why they decided to leave Gardner and travel to this particular party in Lacine. Since Alonzo was described as being more of a homebody, his family was a bit surprised that he even wanted to go to this party, so I get the impression that this was not his idea and he just wanted to tag along with his other friends. While their identities have never been made public, this farmhouse was being rented by four young males at the time, but it sounds like they weren't really living there per se, and just decided to use the location as a party house, which wound up attracting people from outside the area, since it was an ideal spot for underage drinking. While Alonzo was 23 at that time, he was actually a few years older than most of his other friends from this group, who were technically not the legal drinking age yet. I have read that one of Alonzo's friends had a loose connection with one of the four individuals renting the farmhouse, and that they had once gone to the same high school together, so this might explain how they found out about this party, which was taking place nearly 50 miles away from where they lived. Now, it goes without saying that Alonzo's friends have received a lot of criticism for leaving him behind at the party, and some online sleuths have gone so far as to accuse them of being responsible or involved in Alonzo's death. At the very least, there's been suspicion that these friends have never told the whole truth about what actually happened. But it's worth noting that they were extensively questioned and investigated by law enforcement, who have never publicly stated that they believe any of them are withholding information. And personally, while I would certainly find them guilty of being young, drunk, and irresponsible, I would stop short of accusing them of being complicit in a murder. At the very least, I think you can cut some slack towards Daniel Fune and Tyler Bogard, as they both said goodbye to Alonzo when they left the party and said that nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Since Justin Sprague had driven Alonzo there, I'm sure they assumed that Justin would give him a ride home. There appear to be contradictory accounts from Daniel and Justin during their Unsolved Mysteries interviews, as Daniel said that Alonzo got into an argument with another partygoer before he intervened and pulled him away, while Justin reported seeing no confrontations or hostility at all and said that Alonzo was having a great time. While this doesn't necessarily mean that Justin is being untruthful, because if he was separated from Alonzo at that time and not present to witness this altercation with the partygoer, then he was probably completely unaware that anything happened and had no qualms about leaving Alonzo alone to go out and buy cigarettes. Justin's story is that he got lost and his car got stuck on those rural gravel roads, so rather than go to the trouble of making a lengthy drive back to the party, he called a friend of his named Adam and asked him to give Alonzo a ride back home to Gardner. But of course, Adam was not interviewed on Unsolved Mysteries, and since we've never heard him speak publicly to share his side of the story, it's unclear why he left without Alonzo. Well, I previously made mention of a post about this case at the Cold Case Kansas blog, and it makes mention of a guy named Edward Smith, which I think is probably an alias for the mysterious Adam. According to this post, Edward/Adam did approach Alonzo about leaving the party, but Alonso told him that he wanted to stay and would get a ride home with someone else. If this account is true, then it's possible that Alonso may not have even been aware that all of his other friends were gone and there was no one left to give him a ride. But if he was intoxicated, it's understandable that he wouldn't be thinking clearly. We also have all these uncorroborated rumors that Alonso had been flirting with a young white woman at the party, and if these rumors are accurate, and Alonso thought he was getting somewhere, well, this could provide a reason for why he wanted to stay and turn down Adam's offer for a lift. So on August the 7th, 2020, the Daily Mail published an extensive article about Alonso's case, containing a lot of information which was not mentioned during the Unsolved Mysteries episode. I should add the disclaimer that since the Daily Mail is a notorious tabloid, which is known for being an unreliable source of information, I would take what I'm about to share with you with a huge grain of salt, but if their reporting is accurate, it could shed some additional insight into why Alonso was left behind at the party. Rodney English was interviewed for the article and claimed that the story shared by Justin during his Unsolved Mysteries interview was different than the one he shared right after Alonso went missing, as he apparently never mentioned anything about getting lost and only said that his car broke down and he was able to fix it himself by the side of the road. Alonso's mother Maria also alleged that Justin has changed his story about 6 times over the years. Well, the Daily Mail spoke to an anonymous source who was supposedly close to Justin and claimed that he had received death threats since his appearance on Unsolved Mysteries and felt that the show had let him down by editing out significant parts of his interview. According to the source, Justin did leave the party to go purchase cigarettes, but the episode did not mention that he was actually accompanied by another friend. They did apparently get their car stuck in the ditch, but Justin elected not to call for help because he was drunk and high at the time, and since he was about to enlist in the army, he did not want a DUI charge to potentially screw that up. So if Justin was not entirely truthful about how events unfolded that night, this could explain why. However, the Daily Mail reported that phone records did support Justin's story that he used his cell phone to call Adam at the party, and that surveillance cameras soon showed that Justin went to a gas station and withdrew $200 from an ATM. Justin and his friend then went to a strip club, but they wound up getting ejected from there for unknown reasons. Thus far, the Daily Mail is the only media outlet I've seen which has published this account of Justin's story, but if it's true, then it gives him an alibi, placing him away from the farmhouse, and would clear him of any direct involvement in Alonso's death. So yes, while Justin may have been irresponsible that night, it sounds like he does not have any further insight into how or why Alonso was killed. And during his Unsolved Mysteries interview, Justin became fairly emotional, so I get the sense that he was genuinely guilt-ridden and remorseful about not being there for his friend. There's another detail mentioned in the Daily Mail article, which I think might shed some light on all the confusion surrounding the circumstances of Alonso's disappearance. The party was held when daylight saving time took place, and the clocks moved forward an hour at 2 a.m. on the morning of April the 4th. For this reason, investigators had a hard time nailing down a precise timeline, because when you're dealing with a bunch of partygoers who have been drinking, I'm sure that not all of them are going to be keeping track of when the clocks move forward or have an accurate recollection of what time that certain events happened. It's been reported that a fight took place at the party sometime around 2 or 3 a.m., though it's unclear if Alonso was involved, and the original reporting on this story said the last time Alonso was seen was at around 3 or 4 a.m., I'm sure these inconsistencies are the result of different witnesses having different recollections of what time these events took place, as I doubt that all of them would have taken the time change into account. But what's important is that we don't seem to have a solid, concrete account of the last time Alonso was confirmed to be alive. During her interview on Unsolved Mysteries, Cindy said that when she and Billy traveled to Lacine to search for Alonso and checked out the farmhouse, she looked in through the window and saw that the house was empty, and did not look like a place where they had a huge party the night before. The wording is a bit ambiguous, so I'm not sure if Cindy is trying to imply that the house had been completely cleaned up and cleared out. But this could be taken as a sign that something happened to Alonso inside the house, and the responsible parties made sure to do a very thorough cleanup job in order to get rid of any potential evidence. One thing that has never made sense to me is why Alonso's hat and boots were found in separate ditches across the road from each other near the end of the farmhouse driveway. I didn't find it likely that Alonso would have taken off his boots there and then walked back onto the property towards the creek, but if he was murdered, it's also weird that someone would get rid of his boots at that particular spot. Rodney English theorized that someone may have driven to the end of the driveway and tossed the hat and one of the boots into the ditch across the road from their moving vehicle, and then tossed the other boot into a different ditch after they turned right and started heading in that direction. When Justin picked up Alonso at his residence that night, he said that Alonso put on two pairs of socks and rolled down one pair to tie his boot tighter since he had recently suffered an ankle injury. But if Alonso's ankle was bothering him that night, could he have decided to remove his boots at the party before something happened? If Alonso was not wearing his boots when he was killed, this could explain why they were found separate from his body. But then why not just get rid of the boots entirely rather than leave them out in the open at a spot near the farmhouse? This has caused speculation that perhaps the responsible parties wanted the boots to be found in order to send some sort of message, which adds to this whole aura of Lacine being a close-knit small town concealing a dark secret, with most of the residents feeling powerless to do anything. Now, the Daily Mail article also said that a number of different sources gave them the name of an out-of-towner who picked a fight with Alonso, though it's unclear if this is the same individual who was involved in the argument that Daniel Fune had witnessed. But the story goes that when this guy left the party, he drove nearly 200 miles out of state, and he was one of the partygoers who refused to take a polygraph and lawyered up when investigators attempted to question him. While I'm not saying this guy was responsible for Alonso's death, it does open up the interesting possibility that Alonso was killed by someone who did not actually live in the Lacine area. If Alonso realized that all of his friends had left and he no longer had a ride home, could he have accepted a ride from a stranger who he just met at the party that night? Could this person have murdered Alonso at another location and then brought his body back to Lacine and planted it on the bank of Middle Creek? What's interesting is that when Dr. Mitchell performed his original autopsy, it sounds like he was unable to provide a conclusive determination of how long Alonso had been dead before he was found, though he was inclined to believe that his body had been lying on the creek bank the entire time he was missing. But how can we be so certain that Alonso was dead during that entire 27-day window? We've heard all these wild theories about Alonso's body being kept inside a freezer in order to explain why he had such mild decomposition, but the alternate explanation is that someone could have abducted him and held him in captivity for a few weeks before he was killed, and then they proceeded to bring his body back to the property and dump him on the creek bank. Of course, I'm not entirely sure why they would keep him alive this entire time, as it's not like he had any noticeable injuries on his body to suggest he was tortured. But then again, maybe something was found during the most recent autopsy to indicate that Alonso experienced violence before he died. Whatever the case, coming up with a concrete theory about what actually happened to Alonso is incredibly difficult, because even though there are a ton of rumors, gossip, and hearsay about events which may have taken place at that party, there are very few verifiable facts. Other than Justin, Tyler, and Daniel, no one who was in attendance that night has gone on the record to speak about it, and assuming these three guys are all telling the truth, they would have already been gone before the events which caused Alonso's death took place. Even though we've heard reports about people from that party lawyering up and refusing to be questioned or take polygraphs, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're guilty or concealing information, because refusing to take a polygraph or speak to the police without an attorney are always considered to be sound legal advice, even if you're an innocent person. It sounds like the lack of a coherent timeline has always been one of the biggest obstacles for this investigation, because we know at some point that party had to come to an end, but we have no idea if Alonso was still there at that time, and when the last confirmed sighting of him took place. I've always found it hard to believe that something bad could have happened to Alonso at the party in full view of several witnesses, because I just don't believe that many people could keep a secret for 2 decades. Remember, this case has been investigated by many agencies, including the KBI and the FBI, So even if local law enforcement was corrupt, witnesses would have many avenues to turn to if they wanted to talk. Granted, we're not privy to all the details from the investigation, so perhaps people have come forward to share important information with the authorities, but they still don't have the necessary evidence to file charges against anyone. I still wouldn't rule out the possibility that Alonzo's death did not actually take place at the party, but instead occurred after he hitched a ride with someone who harmed him at another location. If this is what happened, then there may only be one or a small handful of people who know the truth about how he died. One other thing I wanted to mention is that there's a website out there at alonzobrooks.com which has been used to promote an upcoming documentary series and accompanying podcast about the case, which is being put together by a Kansas-based filmmaker named Josh Pratt. According to the website, Pratt has been working on this project for several years, even before the Unsolved Mysteries episode came out, and it's going to contain a number of interviews with people connected to the case, including Alonzo's friends and relatives, law enforcement officials, and even persons of interest. However, I have no idea when this series is going to be completed or when its projected release date might be, and perhaps the reclassification of Alonzo's death as a homicide in 2021 has sent the project in an entirely different direction. Whatever the case, if and when this series does get released, it may finally shed some additional light on things and answer a lot of the questions I've had. By all accounts, Alonzo Brooks was a very nice person who loved his family and never caused any trouble, so if he was the victim of a hate crime and the responsible parties have managed to get away with it for 2 decades, then that's a terrible injustice. We still can't be 100% certain that his death was a hate crime, but even if that wasn't the actual motive for his death, a young man still had his life stolen away from him. When I watched the Unsolved Mysteries episode back in 2020, I have to admit that I had mixed feelings about Alonzo's death being a homicide, as I felt that his death could have been some sort of accident, such as a negative reaction to drugs or alcohol, so someone decided to conceal what happened to him before placing his body out in the open. However, the results of the latest autopsy do seem to confirm with absolute certainty that Alonzo was murdered, and even though it's been 2 years since that announcement was made, I do hope that things are still going on behind the scenes to build a case against the responsible perpetrator or perpetrators, and that they will eventually face justice. So if you happen to have any information about the death of Alonzo Brooks, please contact the Kansas City FBI office at 816-512-8200. That's 816-512-8200. You can also submit a tip through the FBI website or call the Greater Kansas City Crime Stoppers Tips Hotline at 816-474-TIPS. That's 816-474-8477. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released an episode about the 1947 disappearance of Army Lieutenant Ray Hickingbotham, a Cold War-era story which was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, and explored the possibility that he was recruited by the government to start a new life under a new identity in order to perform some top-secret work for them. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Pathwind Chili, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, discuss the disappearances of Michael and Chucky Palmer, a pair of brothers who went missing 10 years apart at different locations in Alaska. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to take a moment to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Alexis W., Molly S., Linda I., and Lauren M. Thank you all so much for your support. And before I bring this episode to a close, I'd like to play a promo for a British true crime podcast hosted by two women I recently met at CrimeCon UK, Blue Murder Club.
Hello, it's Kaza and Loza here from the Blue Murder Club True Crime Podcast. We are a fairly new true crime podcast, and I'll let my co-host Lauren explain a little bit about what we've done.
Why not come over and check our back catalogue? We've got Jack the Ripper, We've got Delroy Grant. We're up to season 4 now, so we're covering American Horror Stories murderers, should
yeah,
I say?
Yeah, inspiration. Last week we put out Columbine, didn't we?
We did. And then we've got Mengele.
Yeah, Joseph Mengele this
week. Yeah, so we've got quite, yeah, a few shockers there. Yeah. And we've also had guests like I Could Murder a Pod on. We've interviewed them about their love of true crime.
Mm.
So yeah, pop over and see us. We're on all listening platforms.
Yeah, and we're also on Patreon.
Yeah, lovely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I also wanted to mention that The Trail Went Cold will be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival, which is taking place from August the 25th to the 27th at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in Austin, Texas. We've got a specialized promo code which you can use in order to get a 15% discount on tickets to the event, so if you would like to purchase tickets, please visit their website at truecrimepodcastfestival.com and use our promo code TRAIL. Once again, that's truecrimepodcastfestival.com and the promo code is TRAIL. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶